Our second last speaker today is Alison Thorne. Alison is a founding member of the Indigenous Social Justice Association Melbourne. She is widely published on what it will take to hold police accountable and has been organising to stop First Nations deaths in custody since before the Royal Commission in 1991. Alison's going to discuss the demands necessary to stop deaths in custody, including recommendations from the Royal Commission that remain unimplemented more than 30 years on. Can we give a warm welcome to Alison, please?
Thank you. I too acknowledge that I'm standing on the unceded lands of the Kulin Nation. I'm inspired by Kieran's call to be an accomplice. And I think all of us within the Indigenous Social Justice Association Melbourne will pledge to continue to be accomplices. On this 20th anniversary of the death of TJ Hickey, East Melbourne stands in solidarity with Gail Hickey and with all deaths in custody families. Grief runs deep. Gail and every other person who's lost a loved one in custody bravely and tenaciously continue the fight for justice. They are the backbone of this movement, and we salute you. As you've heard, one of the things that Gail Hickey is campaigning for is to publicly display a truthful plaque to honour the memory of TJ. Gail absolutely refuses to change the wording on the plaque and erase the truth of how TJ died. His death simply cannot be described as an accident. If he had not been racially profiled and chased by Redfern police, and if TJ had not spent much of his young life being subjected to police harassment, TJ may still have been with us today. East Melbourne, formed in the lead up to the first anniversary of the death of TJ in response to an appeal from Gail Hickey and the late Ray Jackson, a remarkable Wiradjuri warrior and campaigner who was fighting to permanently end deaths in custody. Ray Jackson knew what we were up against and what it would take to achieve this goal. He wrote, quote, "The relationship between capital, power, and the police is historically known. The police are there to protect the establishment. They are its frontline forces," end quote. Ray was right, indeed they are. East Melbourne understands that the police force, an institution which uses racism and colonialism as brutal tools, is there to protect the interests of the ruling class. What it will take to stop deaths in custody for good is to dismantle this system, which is based on exploitation and the dispossession of First Nations. But deaths in custody continue to happen. So while we fight to get rid of this whole rotten system, we also need to fight for immediate demands as well. In just 2 months' time, it will be 33 years since the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody made its recommendations. Think about that, 33 long years. And those recommendations include recommendations 87 and 92, which would make imprisonment a sanction of absolute last resort. Incarceration statistics highlight why these recommendations are so damn crucial. 33% of people in prison are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, while First Nations people comprise only 3% of the population, courtesy of genocide. But instead of looking at ways to avoid locking people up, as we've heard from other speakers, all around the country, governments respond to incidents by going on law and order rampages. This is how we got Victoria's tough bail laws with their presumption against bail. And in the state of Queensland, the government has gone so far as to recently suspend human rights protections for some children. There is one justice for the rich and powerful, and another for Black, Indigenous, people of colour, and the poor. This month, Senator Lydia Thorpe asked the government when it will finally remove hanging points from prison cells, things like protruding shower heads and curtain fixtures. This is crucial because, as Kieran has explained, most people who die by suicide in prison do so due to hanging. Even many of the absolute simplest recommendations like this one, things that would actually save lives, have still not been implemented after more than three decades. What we demand is the implementation of all 339 recommendations in every jurisdiction, and we demand it now. The failure to do so after 33 years shows the brutal indifference of the capitalist state, and it is a racist disgrace. The second immediate demand that we raise is for community control of the police. We support the call for bodies with real powers that are elected and directly accountable to the community. And I'd like to quote Ray Jackson again. Writing in the Freedom Socialist Bulletin, he said, quote, "The police must be under community control, not the other way around." ISJA has argued since the early 90s that the power of police to investigate themselves must be taken away. What must be put in place is an independent investigative team involving Aboriginal people and other minorities. There must be attached to this a civilian review panel to make sure that the police role is absolutely transparent and that there is no chance of a cover-up. As long as police have these powers, we will never get to the truth about the deaths and other wrongs that happen in police custody, Aboriginal, Islander, Asian or white, end quote. Wise words indeed from Ray Jackson. As is the case with so many deaths in custody, after TJ's death, police investigators spectacularly failed to collect vital evidence, as we heard from Cheryl. Police investigators are not interested in finding the truth. What their role is to protect their mates. And we say shame. Charges are rarely laid, and when they are, what happens? The coppers walk free. Shame. The fact that Senior Sergeant Chris Hurley, killer of Murrinjee Dumijee and an absolute serial thug, served 29 years in the Queensland Police Force before he finally got caught out for assaulting a motorist on the Gold Coast. That's ample proof of this. Five police officers were acquitted of the manslaughter of John Pat, a 16-year-old Aboriginal boy whose death in a Roebourne police cell in 1983 was instrumental in sparking the Royal Commission. These five coppers were drunk and off duty when they assaulted the teenager and they walked free. Shame. The WA police officer who shot and killed JC, a 29-year-old Yamachi mum in Geraldton, was found not guilty by an all-white jury. Shame. while cop Zachary Rolfe was also acquitted of the fatal shooting of 19-year-old Kumanjai Walker in Uendamu. Walpiri Elder Ned Hargraves has called for the police to be disarmed and made accountable to the Uendamu community. And he argues it is wrong that, quote, unarmed locals of tens of thousands of years are under the constant surveillance of settler officers with guns on their own lands. Every example where police are involved in a death in custody is a stark reminder that we simply cannot rely on police to investigate themselves. We need to continue advocating for independent community control bodies with real powers to hold police accountable. The ongoing passage of years will not dampen our passion for justice, and we will not stop until we have answers, until all the uniform killers are held to account, and until the genocidal deaths in custody stop. We will keep fighting for a world where no parent has to bury their child under such tragic circumstances in the way that so many First Nations parents continue to have to do. Let's end with a chant that is raised each year at the commemoration in Redfern. They say accident, we say murder. They say accident, we say murder. They say accident, we say murder. And one more. Justice for TJ, we're not going away. Justice for TJ, we're not going away. Justice for TJ, we're not going away. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Alison. We have one more speaker on the schedule today, Robbie Thorpe, who's still on his way down from camp. So we're going to proceed on now with the reading of some tribute placards for a small number of the 558 First Nations people who have been killed by police or corrections custody before we have a minute's silence for them and their families. In this time, we're going to have a bit of an open platform afterward. If you would like to come up and say anything at all, please come and speak to me during this moment. I'm now going to invite people to come up and read those.
John Pat, death in custody, 28 September 1983. On 28 September 1983, John Pat, a 16-year-old Yinjibarangi youth, tried to rescue his friend, Ashley James, from a brawl with a drunken off-duty cop. Because John tried to pull him out of the sway of fists from the cop, who had chased down Ashley, having earlier said to Ashley, I'll get you, you black cunt. John Pat was bashed, his aorta torn, striking his head on the road, then kicked in the head and face. Shame! He was arrested, tossed, it was said by a witness, like a dead kangaroo into the back of a police van and taken to the lockup. Shame! Where he died soon after of closed head injuries, it was said, in a juvenile police cell. In that cell, coppers did the obviously wrong thing. They washed down his dead body and changed his clothes before investigators viewed his body. Shame.
Shame.
That day, outside the Roeburn Hotel, five off-duty, inebriated cops laid into Aboriginal youth, and 3 years later, the police union lawyer, John Quigley, later a parliamentarian, got them off with the help of an all-white jury.
Shame!
John Pat was bashed to death. John Pat will never be forgotten. Stop deaths in custody now.
Wayne Fella Morrison, death in custody, 26 September 2016. 29-year-old Wiradjuri Kakafa man, Wayne Fella Morrison, 29, died in September 2016 after being restrained and placed face down in the prison van at Yatala Labour Prison in Adelaide's north. Mr. Morrison was restrained after allegedly attacking officers at the prison while he was on remand awaiting a home detention bail hearing. In the opening day of the inquest, CCTV footage was played showing a group of officers restraining Mr. Morrison, placing him in the van and transporting him to another area of the prison before he was pulled out of the vehicle, blue and unresponsive, some 3 minutes later.
Shame.
However, the court heard there was no CCTV recording from inside the van. What happened in the crucial minutes inside the prison van before Mr. Morrison was pulled out are unknown, because corrections officers have refused to provide statements. Mr. Morrison's hands and legs had been restrained and a spit mask had been placed on his face before he was put face down in the van with a group of prison officers. Medical experts concluded Mr. Morrison had suffered a heart attack and multi-organ failure. A number of factors could have contributed to Mr. Morrison's death, including psychological and physical stress related to his being restrained, restraint asphyxia, positional asphyxia in respect to how he was transported, and asphyxia related to the spit mask.
Shame.
After Mr. Morrison was pulled out of the van, blue and unresponsive, there was a delay of almost another 3 minutes before CPR was performed on him.
Shame.
He was then taken to hospital where he died 3 days later. The inquest heard an error in processing Mr. Morrison's entry into the prison meant his ethnicity was not consistently recorded as Aboriginal, and he therefore did not receive support from an Aboriginal liaison officer.
Shame.
Ms. Anderson, a friend of Mr. Morrison, said, "Wayne to me was a strong, independent son. He was very likeable. Lots of people liked him. People always wanted to spend time with him. He loved fishing. He fished nearly every day. He would take his daughter out fishing with him as well. Wayne Fella Morrison will never be forgotten. Stop deaths in custody now."
Seth Carlton, death in custody, 3rd of May 2018. Seth Carlton was a young Kimberley boy who died in custody at the age of just 19. He was incarcerated in Derby's West Kimberley Regional Prison and died just 6 weeks before his scheduled release. The teenager had lifelong history of chronic heart problems, having been diagnosed with acute rheumatic fever when he was 9 years old. Seth was booked in twice for surgery to replace his damaged heart valve, once in 2015 and once in 2016. But neither appointments went ahead.
Shame!
The second attempt at surgery was postponed by medical staff after Seth was imprisoned in January 2016. While incarcerated, Seth was referred for an urgent cardiology appointment, but despite that referral, he was not added to the visiting cardiologist list and missed the appointment.
Shame!
While a later referral was made the next month, there's no evidence that it was ever sent to the service provider. He had a horrendously leaky valve that urgently required a surgical replacement. His mum, Marlene Carlton, is angry that her son was put into the justice system and then the system failed him. She says, "The prison system, the justice system, and the health system all failed him. They just did not do their jobs."
Shame.
Shame! Seth Carlton will never be forgotten. Stop deaths in custody now.
In custody now.
David Dungai, death in custody, 29th December 2015. The 26-year-old Dangote man from Kempsey, a known diabetic, suffered a cardiac arrest when he was pinned down by five members of the Long Bay Jail's immediate action team for refusing to stop eating biscuits and then injected with two strong sedatives. He was due to be released 3 weeks later. Shame.
Shame.
Mr. Dungo, grasping for air, screaming and crying and repeatedly saying, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe." As he is escorted down a corridor with his head held down, a sock on one foot, the other one bare, he said again, "He can't breathe." Shame.
Shame.
He is taken to a new cell and pinned face down on a bed with an officer's knee on his back. His pants are pulled down and a nurse injects him with mesolamem, a powerful sedative. He cries and yells, "I can't breathe. Shame."
Shame.
Throughout the incident, Dungo shouts that he cannot breathe and begs to be let go. He shrieks and cries. A guard responds, "If you're talking, you can breathe." Shame.
Shame.
David's mother, Leonota Dungai, commented, "My son's life was taken over a packet of biscuits. I heard from guards and nurses who let my son David die because they failed in their duty of care." Roald Bassi from Istra, Sydney said, "The guards spent half an hour in resuscitation attempts when they released David, realised David was dead. Only after this did medical staff from Justice Health come in, but they made errors. They placed a tube down David's throat, but he did not take the lid off. They only worked on David for 8 minutes. Some nurses admitted they had no training in resuscitation." How can nurses have no training in this? David Dungai will never be forgotten. Stop deaths in custody now.
Stop deaths in custody now.
Joyce Clark, death in custody, 7th of September 2019. JC, a Yamatji woman who owned mother of a 6-year-old, was just 29 years old when she was fatally shot by police in Geraldton. She was just a few days out of prison, broke and with no health supports when she began behaving erratically. Her worried family called for help to get her taken back to hospital. Three cars with eight cops arrived, and in space of just 17 seconds, one fatally shot JC in the stomach. Shame. The police officer was charged with murder, the first WA police officer to face this charge in more than a century. But that cop maintained their privacy and was not named. After a 3-week trial, it took the jury just 3 hours to bring down a not guilty verdict. In response to this verdict, JC's sister, Bernadette Clark, said, "In terms of Aboriginal people, we don't get no fairness. There's no equality, and this is evidence with what's happened here."